Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? This is Lee for Lee and Keys. Real talk. Come on.
Well, you're probably walking a lot more now.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? It's Lee from Lena King's Real Talk. Had a little bit of technical difficulty just then. But I'm here. We here. Came to talk to you tonight. Hope everybody doing well. Got a lot to talk about. Talk about some results of some previous fights. Talk about some things that's been going on social media as far as upcoming fights. You know, Fight Island. I saw a video concerning Fight Island this morning that was really dope. But hopefully everybody's going to be safe. Have a good 4th of July weekend. What's going on, Keys? Yeah, what up, Keys? You there? Okay, I think my man Keys might be having some technical difficulties. But, you know, I wanted to touch base about Fight Island. Saw a video this morning on TMZ Sports about the construction of the complex, the way it looked. It is a really well put together facility. I think Dana White and the UFC spared no expense. They said that the fighters would be tested prior to leaving for Fight Island. They'd be tested twice while they're on Fight Island, and they'll be tested once after the fight is over. So the UFC is definitely going, I think, above and beyond to make sure everybody is going to be safe and healthy. And if you've been following our show, you know that's been one of my big things, that I want to make sure that the UFC was making sure that the fighters and their staff was taken care of, and that everybody was going to be safe and healthy. And look like they're doing that, because Dana White really hasn't been one to take this pandemic seriously. But I think the organization has fallen in line with the rest of the country and really taking this thing for what it's worth and taking it seriously. Let's see whether or not I can get my man Keys in. Keys, you there? Okay, well, let me keep on going. A lot of stuff has been going on in the UFC. This past weekend, we had Dustin Poirier beat up Dan Hooker really, really bad. I thought Hooker would be the perfect opponent for Poirier, just because Hooker is one of those guys that his defense is suspect. And you can't have suspect defense against a precise striker. And that's why I thought he would lose to Poirier. But I think I was more surprised about how good Perry looked against Mickey Gall. But at the same time, Mickey Gall isn't a striker. And Mickey Gall, basically, if he can't take you down, then basically he isn't that good of a fighter. Mickey Gall is he's kind of like the American version of Damian Maia, that he will wrestle and grapple you to death, but he's not going to stand and bang with you because that's not his forte. And I think that was showcased last Saturday in his fight against Mike Perry. So does that make me a believer in Perry? No, it doesn't. I still think he's very much overrated. I don't think he's as good as his mouth tends to make him sound. And then Perry also this week decided to call out Nate Diaz. I think those two would be good leading up to the fight. But I think once the fight started, Nate would dominate him and it wouldn't be a close fight. So I really don't know what Perry's objective is right now as far as calling out Nate Diaz, except trying to keep a big name in his mouth. So, but we all know that once he calls out a big name, normally the fight doesn't go his way, and he basically looks pretty bad, and his skill set or the lack thereof is highlighted. So I don't see Nate Diaz probably sniffing his nose at a fight with Mike Perry. I would see Nate Diaz probably looking for a bigger name. So that's a good try by Mike Perry to get a name, to, you know, throw a name out there that possibly might fall for the bait. So, we'll see what happens. But back to Dustin Poirier. I think Poirier, the way the UFC has been working lately, basically Poirier is probably going to have to fight one more fight before he get another title shot. So I think the fight that most people are clamoring for Poirier is Poirier versus Ferguson. I think you could deem that as a title elimination fight, and I think most UFC fans would be all in for that fight. I would want that to be a main event fight so we can get five rounds of it. But with the news of Ferguson asking for a rematch with Gaethje, we'll have to see how that plays out. Let me see if my man Keys is out there. Keys, what's up, man? You there?
Yeah. I was just waiting for you to get done. I didn't want to cut you off.
Oh, that's cool. So I was just telling the people
what's going on?
I'm good, man. How about yourself?
I'm great. I just had some dinner. There's been a couple of shows where y'all know I didn't eat dinner and I was a bit off. I get a bit off. If Keys don't have dinner, you get a bit off. So it's good that we just finished up dinner. So I got some fresh thoughts. I got some fresh thoughts to put down over a lot of things. And that which you were just saying was a good time for me to have jumped in right at that moment, because that was the first thing on my mind. Was first of all the Poirier and Hooker fight, but the news that someone just sent me a couple hours ago sent me an article saying how talking about Ferguson calling out Gaethje for a rematch, and the thing that I suspect with that is, I would think that it's kind of weird because, like, if you really think about it, it's kind of – I feel like the UFC would be kind of – I wouldn't say they'd be hard-pressed to make that rematch, because if you really think about it, I mean, some say it was just because they didn't have a show for a while. But that Gaethje Ferguson card did real good. That did real good at the box office. And that was a type of pay-per-view – results that you don't really see that often in the UFC. I want to say they did upwards of 700,000 pay-per-view buys, I want to say it was in that range, which is real good. It's real good. You usually only see those kinds of numbers if it's like a, you know, maybe a big John Jones card. Sometimes not even then if he's not really fighting anybody too prominent. Maybe a Jones DC card, you usually see those numbers, or George St. Pierre return, or George St. Pierre card period, you usually see numbers upwards of the 700,000s for the pay-per-view buys. So for Gaethje and Ferguson to do those numbers, two guys that, you know, if you're a casual fan, you probably wouldn't know. You might know who they are, but you really don't know too much about them. And if you're a casual fan who only really watches now and then, you might not even really realize the magnitude of that fight, Gaethje and Ferguson. So for them to have did that, those kind of numbers. I mean, it wasn't just them. You had like a stat card, but you know, for that card to do those numbers, I don't think the UFC would be hard pressed to make a rematch. But at the same time, the reason why I think it would be maybe a bit more unlikely to happen is because, I mean, point A, from my eyes, I saw Ferguson getting dominated. I saw him getting dominated, and maybe other people saw it differently. Maybe he didn't, but I remember him getting dominated in the stand-up pretty much the entire fight. And I don't really – usually those kinds of ones don't usually, you know, warrant a rematch. But even more so than that, right, is how do you make that rematch when picture this. You have Gaethje versus Khabib on the horizon. So that one I'm figuring – we're just waiting on the announcement for it. That one's got to be locked in. I mean, Fight Island is confirmed. It's in Abu Dhabi. You know, that's a home game for Khabib. That's a home game. So you got to figure that fight is already at least signed. That fight's got to be at least signed, you know, and in the works.
I think it's September. I think it's
right.
Targeted for September.
So they got to get – all right, so my insider says – my insider source – That Lee is he just confirmed that it's set for not set but it's speculated for September, so I'm gonna believe him. He's the inside source of the two of us. He got the scoop on these things. But it would be tough because if you have Khabib and Gaethje, right? What happens then? If the only way I could see that fight, that rematch getting set up, and even then I feel like it would be unlikely is if Gaethje beats Khabib. That's the only way that I could see that rematch. That's the most likely scenario, because if you really think about it, if Gaethje loses, I would think that the UFC is going to jump to do Khabib and Tony.
Nope.
I disagree. If Khabib wins, you don't think they would jump to do Khabib and Tony?
Nope. I think that'll get them out to make Conor versus Khabib. I think if Khabib beats Gaethje, that gives them their out to do Khabib versus McGregor 2, because they can use the excuse of Gaethje beat Ferguson. Poirier lost to Khabib. And basically you're going to have either Ferguson Poirier, or you gonna have to do Poirier Gaethje as the title eliminator fight. So I think they would use Gaethje losing as a reason to put Conor in a title match with Khabib. Because they can say that the top three or four guys lost to each other, and they can say that Khabib versus Conor is a bigger money fight. And I think that's the route they're going. I think they're hoping that Gaethje loses so they can do McGregor versus Khabib probably in front of fans, probably later in the year, around about December. So I think that's what they're hoping for. And would I be mad about it? On the business side, no. But as a fan, I want to see Gaethje. I want to see Ferguson versus Khabib. Now, if Gaethje wins, you get a Gaethje-Khabib too, because they're going to automatically give Khabib a rematch against Gaethje. Even though I don't think he deserves an automatic rematch, but they would give it to him.
Well, yeah, that's where I was getting to with my spiel. Is I was saying, I feel like no matter, in my opinion, still, no matter who wins, I think they're going to jump for the no matter who wins, you don't – it's not that they jump for the same fight, but you don't see – I think no matter who wins the fight, you do not see Ferguson get a rematch with Gaethje. That's what I think. I don't think there's really a reason. I mean, even though they did do great numbers, they also had, like, many other great fights on the card that did great numbers. It wasn't just them. So they had, you know, a very, very good cast of characters there that, as a team, how I like to think of it, as a team, they did great numbers, you know, and which is fine. You know, sometimes that doesn't even happen. Sometimes, you know, the UFC will do three title fights, and it's still and if you pick the three certain title fights, and depending on which division you picked, those three title fights might not even have the same level of success as another given two title fights, or even a one title fight. Like it really depends there. But yeah, but I don't think that alone is enough. I don't think Ferguson will end up getting the fight either way, because if Gaethje wins, you know they're gonna. Khabib being, you know, 28-0 or whatever, 29 that he is, they're going to say that he, you know, definitely deserves a rematch. And, you know, he's going to be crying too. You know, he's going to be crying too if he loses. You know that. And I know that. So he's going to be crying for a rematch. And if Khabib wins, then like you said, maybe they get McGregor in there for the rematch. But, you know, I really hope not. You know, I really hope not. And you know, McGregor fan club and all, I hope not, because it just doesn't feel right. I mean, the last time they fought, he at least was coming off like a more notable win. I mean, let me think about this. Actually, not. Well, yeah, in terms of in the UFC, if you really look at it, he doesn't.
He was coming off McGregor only has a couple. He was coming off Alvarez fight, right?
Yeah, I'm just saying that at least then you could say when you're going into the fight, you had beaten somebody who's somebody in the lightweight division. But when you're going into this rematch, I just don't feel like now is the right time in terms of him having a win over somebody who's somebody. I mean, beating, you know, he beat Cowboy. I mean, I don't really think that's the same level as beating Alvarez in the lightweight division. I don't feel like they're really the same caliber fighter. I mean, I guess Alvarez and Cerrone are similar, but I don't think they're on the same level in terms of if you beat that guy, then you're right here. If you beat this guy, then you stand over here. I just don't think they're in the same bracket like that. A win over each guy does not mean the same thing. I mean, it is a name, but I just don't see how. I mean, what I would really want to happen is you have if Gaethje loses, have Gaethje fight McGregor like I asked for back in 2018. Have him fight McGregor. If he wins that fight, give him the winner of Khabib and Tony. That's what I think. Or if Gaethje's going to sit out after he loses, depending on how he loses, he might not even want to fight right away. He might take 6 months off. If he gets absolutely dominated and battered, who knows? He might turn right around, he might not. But say he, in the event he doesn't, and he doesn't want to fight for a while, and he said, I'm going to take some time off, let's do Ferguson versus McGregor. Or if you can't do that one, let's do Poirier versus McGregor 2
while we're doing Habib and Tony, and then the winner of that fight the winner of that, because I feel like with the Poirier McGregor 2 fight, it's such a legit number one contender fight, because a win over either one of those guys to me is enough to put you for the title. To me, is Poirier is a big name in the lightweight division. I think if Hooker were to get a win over Poirier, then you could have argued him to fight next for the title, to fight the winner of that fight. But he lost. But Poirier, being the way he lost in the title fight, I feel like he needs to. He couldn't get by with just beating Hooker. He has to get one more to be back for the title, because the way he lost in the title fight, he just didn't look good. And it was like, it's similar to how I look at McGregor. Is like, you can't just get one win and then fight for the title. I think he needs at least one more. But if you get one more off a big name, you would have beat a Gaethje, or you would have beat a Poirier, or you beat a Ferguson. There's really no other reason why you shouldn't be right there.
Oh, I'm going to look at it a whole different way. I'm going to go a whole different way on you, Keys. I'm going to switch directions on you. But we're going to get back to the same thing. I think if Volkanovski beats Max, I wouldn't mind seeing Max Holloway versus Tony Ferguson. I think that'll be a fight you could sell to the fans. Max moves up in weight. He fights a top five guy, because I think with him being a long reigning champion on the win streak he was on, if he was to move up in weight, I think he would definitely probably automatically start in the top 12. So I would say if Max loses to Volkanovski, you have Max Holloway versus Tony Ferguson. Then you have Poirier versus Gaethje. And then you give Conor what he wants, another rematch with Khabib. You get your big money fight on the business side. You get your quote-unquote title eliminator and Gaethje versus Poirier. Then you have the next fighter in line, which would be the winner of the Max Holloway versus Tony Ferguson fight. Now, let's say if Max Holloway and Max beats Volkanovski, then we have to reshuffle the cards, and I think you go with, all right, if Gaethje beats Khabib, you have Gaethje versus Khabib the rematch, because the UFC is going to try to sell us on a rematch. Or you can have Gaethje call out McGregor, and that way the UFC gets McGregor his title fight. Then you can have Ferguson versus Poirier and a title eliminator, and Khabib just sitting out there probably waiting probably a year, 6 months to fight for the belt again, because our thing he got to do is say, hey, I was the longest reigning champ or some shit like that. You know, I deserve to fight for the belt, la, 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 la. And you know, the UFC would, of course, get him his wish. So Khabib would still be in the picture, but you still have the division moving forward with Gaethje fighting Conor. You'll have Poirier versus Ferguson. And then, you know, you'll have Khabib waiting in the wings. Now, if Khabib wins, like I said, they're going to give Conor the title fight, man, because it makes business sense. It makes business sense. You're going to sell pay-per-views. The Conor fans will come out, and by then, hopefully, you'll be able to have fans in the stands. So I think they will make that fight, and then you'll have Poirier or Ferguson versus Gaethje. Now, I don't know how the card's going to shake out or who would get the shot at Gaethje, but hopefully what will happen is what you said, Gaethje will take time off, and then it opens up Poirier versus Ferguson as a title eliminator. What do you think about that?
I mean, can you hear me good?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, so I think with the way that you laid it out right there, there's basically you tend to look at the business side and the from a fan side, and from a business side and from a fan side, I don't think there's many unhappy campers with that arrangement that you're suggesting. If you know, if Holloway were to beat Volkanovski, like you said, that really shuffles the deck, and I think that'd be more on the unexpected side. I don't really know who's coming in as a favorite and who's the underdog in that fight for the rematch. I don't know right now.
I think it's gonna be a pick'em. I think it's gonna come in as a pick'em. That's what I think. I think it's gonna be so close that it was a pick'em, because last time I think Max was heavily favored. And I think this time it probably comes in close to being a pick'em.
Hold on, I'm actually I'm looking it up right now. So let's look at DraftKings Nation betting odds for the rematch. They have Volkanovski is a -215 and Holloway is a +170.
So that's close.
That's for the rematch. Yeah, I'd say it's a pretty close line. That's from DraftKings. So usually I tend to look at, like, I do look at a lot of CBS Sports odds, especially when I look up betting lines on this show. I tend to look at CBS Sports because they tend to be on the game with the betting lines and with the, you know, card updates and things like that. And I like to – I appreciate the work they put in, so I do like to look at CBS Sports odds. They always come out with something. But
ESPN has Volkanovski as a -180 and Max as a +160. ESPN.
Who?
ESPN.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, they got Volkanovski -180 and Holloway +160.
Yeah, BetOnline has Volkanovski. I guess he opened as a -200, but then. Yeah, so he opened as a -200 and Max at a +175. So it seems like all the odds are relatively within, you know, a small window, little wiggle room, but relatively in the same area. There's actually an article too, I guess, from MMA Mania. Yeah, those odds were from MMA Mania, but I think it was quoted from Bet Online betting site. There's another article that says, disrespected, Alexander Volkanovski guarantees stoppage win over Max Holloway in rematch. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible. I mean, I don't know about all that, because Holloway doesn't really get stopped. I don't even know if he's ever been stopped. I don't even know. I can't recall a time that he was stopped. I've seen him lose decisions. I've never seen him get stopped. But, I mean, if it were to happen, it would definitely be, a historic. It would be a big moment for Volkanovski, because Holloway doesn't lose in that way. So that would be very surprising to me. But at the same time, this sport is always surprising to me. There's so many things I say I don't think will happen, and they end up happening. Things that I deem very unlikely, and they end up happening. So,
all Holloway's losses have come by decision, except his loss to Dustin Poirier was a submission back in 2012.
Oh, I guess Valentina was supposed to defend her title on this card too.
Nah, she opted out for surgery. She had to have knee surgery.
She kicked ass,
but they
so
got
much.
Rose,
she doesn't always
they got play. Rose versus Andrade.
Yeah, that's a good replacement fight, because I know you've been waiting for the Rose return. I know you've been waiting for it, and a lot of people have. A lot of people have been waiting for her to see her come back.
Actually, if you look at this card really isn't bad. except the way that most people feel about Aldo fighting for the belt. Outside of that, you know, I mean, I wouldn't have Paige VanZant on the main card, but outside of that, you got Andrade, Namajunas, Jan Aldo, Volkanovski, Holloway, and Usman and Burns. And then on the card, you got Uzdemir, you got Santos, you got Tabura, you got Paver, you got I mean, this card really isn't bad. And when you look at the betting lines, all of them are pretty close, except Paige VanZant.
Wait, what's the odds for that one?
They got Rebus at a minus 950 and VanZant at a plus 625. Yep, and VanZant at a plus 625. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Yeah.
Me personally, I think this would be VanZant's last fight in the UFC because she's really not that good. She's pretty. You know, she's good on the eyes, but she hasn't got better as a fighter. And I think this would be her last fight. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know about all that, though, man. You really look at it. I mean, I think she has 3 wins by armbar. The only female fighter to be doing arm bars anymore. She has a couple wins. It's not like she loses every fight.
All right. So I'm looking at her. She beat Rachel Ostovich. Wow. She did win that fight, but then she lost decision, lost submission. She beat Beck Rollins by TKO, lost to Namajunas. She do have some good wins on her record, but I just don't think she's into the fight game no more. I think she's into everything outside of the octagon, and she has a promising career outside of the octagon. So I just don't think we'll see, because normally when we start counting fighters out like Neil Magny, they turn around and give you a performance that you didn't see coming. So I think Rebus is gonna beat her up really bad, and I think that'll be it for her in the UFC.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Amanda Ribas. I was actually one of the first people to write about Amanda Ribas when she was coming off a long USADA suspension. I think it was like a couple of years. I don't want to say it was like a 4-year suspension. And I think it was a false suspension, too. I think they actually cut it short. I want to say they cut it short because they found out, I think it was like, I want to say she got a 4-year ban. I want to say she got a 4-year ban, and she was about 2.5 years into her sentence. Because I remember it was like about a year and a half that they said she would have had left. She would have had 18 months. And then right at that, around that time, it was determined that it was that they were wrong, and that it was, like you said, whether it was a tainted supplement or such and so forth, and they actually they let her back, you know, without serving the year and a half. Because, I mean, rightly so. If we were wrong, then it's your right to be able to get back. I mean, you probably shouldn't have even served 2.5 years in the first place. So they kind of did her wrong with that. But I mean, hey, I guess I don't know how the system works. I mean, but like I said, I was one of the first ones to write about Amanda Ribas. I'm just saying.
Keys, I know this is going to be a hard left, but what you just said about Amanda Ribas, right? When your starter comes out and they suspend somebody and then come to find out that the fighter didn't do anything wrong, I think the fighter should better sue your starter, man. I think there should be a way USADA should be punished for wrongfully suspending and taking money out of fighters' pockets, because there is no way a fighter can get a year and a half, 2 years of their career back. You say in a year and a half, 2 years, where a fighter that's fighting all the time could probably fight 3 times a year, so basically that's 6 possible paydays they could get in a probably in a 2-year or 18-month time period. I think USADA needs to be held more accountable for suspending fighters and then coming back and saying, oh, yeah, it was a tainted supplement. it's like the fighter is like, yeah, their name is clear, but they can't reclaim none of that money they could have made. So you clearing their name, what is that? So? It's like,
yeah,
what?
I don't really know.
But you follow.
Yeah, I don't really know how, or not how, but what would be a good way to have, you know, sort of a fallback on, you know, on USADA for wrongly prosecuting somebody, whatever, however you want to, maybe that's not the best word, but for they do somebody wrong and they find out we were wrong, I'm not really sure what would be the best way to go with that. But it would be nice to see something be able to be done for these fighters who get these, you know, sentences and turn out to be faulty down the line. It would be nice to see some kind of credit being given or some kind of system to right that wrong. If you were to, you know, have somebody sidelined for a couple of years and they get to, I mean, there's a lot of things that factor in when you're losing all that time. It's definitely significant, but it's bad in a fighter's career. It's significant in a bad way because you're adding all that time. You know, they're not getting any younger, and they're more or less on the couch. I mean, I'm sure they're training, but they're more or less on the couch and not active. And it definitely doesn't help the fighter. So it would be nice to see something be done, you know, in that sense.
Yeah, because if you look at it, Neil Magny, he lost 16 months. He was suspended 16 months, and they came back and said it was a tainted supplement. Sean O'Malley, he got suspended. Ended up being a tainted supplement. I was going to say Revis was in the same boat as Sean O'Malley, that she tested for Osteris metabolites, and it ended up being a tainted supplement. It's like, come on, man. Y'all, you quit to suspend the fighters, but you're not held accountable for when they're telling you the truth for them losing wages. I mean, it has to be some kind of way. USADA has to be held accountable. And there is a way that they basically, because the fighters, I mean, the fighters, if they go out to USADA, if I was a USADA, you know, every week they're going to have somebody knocking at my door asking me for a piss test as retribution or punishment. So, you know, man, I know that was a hard left, but it's kind of because, like you said, fighters don't get younger, they get older. And Father Time is undefeated. So, you know, like in the case of Neil Magny, he's an older guy. So he lost 16 months. You know, Sean O'Malley is still pretty young. So, you know, he lost, I think he got a 6-month suspension that was retroactive. And then he was due to fight at UFC 239, but then they wouldn't give him a license. So he couldn't fight until UFC Jacksonville after the pandemic. So it's like, man, I just want to see a way that USADA is held accountable and fighters are taken care of for that wrongful time that they were spent as being suspended and banished from the sport. So I know that was a hard left, but let's jump into something really quick, man. I know you probably ain't ready for this, but man, there have been some sexy photos on Twitter for MMA fighters, women MMA fighters. Man, I have not seen a time in UFC and mixed martial arts, period, where there has been so many sexy women in the sport. Do you think sexy women sell fights, or do you think sexy women. Do you think they bring anything to the MMA table?
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably bring, you know, a bit more eyes. I don't know, like, how much more. But I do think they bring more eyes on the sport just based on, you know, I mean, because it's kind of like, you know, it's not the exact same thing, but, like, how many people, you know, might not watch, I mean, a lot of people watch Super Bowl, but how many people might not watch football, but they're going to watch the halftime show because Beyonce is performing? You know, maybe that's not the exact same thing, but, I mean, I think it's...
Watch the Super Bowl for the commercials.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that too. Like, that factor is definitely there. We actually have two callers in the queue right now. You want to jump? We'll jump one of these callers in onto in the.
Yeah, go ahead. You need me to do it?
Yeah, so I don't know who was here first, but you're on the line, so.
Oh, hey, fellas. How are you?
All right. Good stuff.
You know, I mean, you were just mentioning about, you know,
what's up, Evan?
MMA and, you know, the sports. You know, to have those women, yeah, because it does make it more I think the male audience finds it more attractive to have the sexy women MMA fighters and UFC fighters in there. I think it gives them more sex appeal. Remember, sex sells. You know, you have these attractive women, and, you know, and they're not bad fighters, to be honest with you. I think some are even better than the guys.
Well, it's the same thing. It's the same thing with the WWE too, Lee. And it's the same thing too. To your point, WWE. How many people watch WWE just because they have the divas and because they have the women's division? It just so happens. Well, it doesn't just so happen. Actually, I think it's a thing that's done on purpose.
Well,
is that they have, like, the fact that you have all your, like, not in the, in much, it's not as much in the UFC, but in the WWE, could it be a coincidence that all the women's wrestlers are all highly attractive? I mean, I'm just saying, I think that,
yeah,
at least in wrestling, that is a part of what, you know, scouters are looking for.
Right.
Even in, like, the AEW, to your point, and to your point, Lee, in the AEW, I think the same thing, if not even more so. A lot, the AEW is picking up a lot of wrestlers from this independent circuit, and I feel like they're scouting for. You mean the wrestlers that they're bringing in, the women's wrestlers they're bringing in are drop dead gorgeous, and they're really,
yes,
talented. So,
oh my,
and maybe it could even be said that it just so
you're
happens that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it could just so happen that they're highly talented, you know, wrestlers tend to, there's some kind of correlation between that and their looks.
All right, let me jump another call in real quick. Hold on.
Yeah, because we actually have two more on the line, so we kind of.
I know. I see. Yo, what's up, man? How you doing tonight? This is Lee from Lee and Keys. Who is this?
This is Naj, man. What's up, y'all?
What's up, man?
What's up, bro?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm good, man. Just wanted to weigh in on this and then ask y'all a question.
Okay.
As far as, like, the women in MMA, WWE, whatever you want to name, basically you're talking about the business side understanding the population. So, I mean, they're just playing to what people are already like. So if you got two wrestlers,
okay,
that are of equal quality, and one of them look like something and the other one don't, the one with the looks is going to get the bump, the promotion, and the push from the organization because they know, you know, that's the way to the money. So they're pretty much just playing to their audience. You know what I mean? This is the game that's being played. Do I think that gives you the best pool of fighters? I would say no, and I would say women's MMA kind of suffers because of that. When you think about the Ronda Rousey years where people was out here talking about, man, Ronda Rousey could beat Floyd Mayweather and crazy stuff like that, when Ronda Rousey was basically beating up the bum of the week because the pool wasn't that deep as far as talent. And,
yeah, that's true.
And when you look for talent in this way, you kind of, you know what I mean, you're kind of cutting your own nose off a little bit because you're not going to get the best of the best because you're trying to sell something.
Plus, if you look at it, Misha Tate was far more attractive than Ronda Rousey, if you ask me. I think Misha Tate was probably, she's probably top 10 sexiest women in MMA history. And
oh, yeah.
And when you look at Misha versus Ronda, Ronda had less sex appeal than Misha Tate, but Ronda was the draw. But that's one thing about MMA that's different from wrestling is, MMA, you got to go in the octagon and you have to prove who the better fighter is. So although Misha Tate is more appealing to the eye, she wasn't a better fighter than Ronda Rousey. So Misha Tate, in your words, would never get that rub because she couldn't beat Rousey, whereas in WWE, AEW, they can make it so that Sasha Banks get the rub. They can make it so mm-hmm. that Charlotte Flair gets the rub. Even Sonya Deville, if you look at Sonya Deville here lately, they have dressed her up. And I think she is hotter than Mandy Rose. When they put her in that all-black suit with her long, flowing black hair, she looked as super fly that night on SmackDown. So WWE and AEW, they can give who they want to have the rub, whereas MMA, you got to prove it in the ring. And I think Paige VanZant, she's probably one that's super pretty. But if you really look at her skills, she's really not a top 15 fighter, although she's probably top 10 hottest in the game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So she'll probably get farther than what her talent show. It's the Anna Kournikova concept, basically. Those
exactly.
looks are going to get that person
perfect
further along
example.
Than what their talent is. You know what I'm saying?
Perfect
but
example.
Either way, like, okay, take Misha Tate. Put Misha Tate in this era, which probably the women's MMA is probably deeper and probably better fighters. She never reaches that pinnacle of fighting those championship fights like that, to me. You know what I'm saying? Just going off of the talent. And then lastly, since y'all MMA guys, y'all going to know this way better than me, I've never seen Tony Ferguson look like the guy everybody claims him to be, man. I got bad luck. So, like, I watched Anderson Silva at the end. I didn't see him in his prime. I got on the MMA late. Now, y'all got to explain to me why Tony Ferguson has this reputation that he has. Because I tuned in to pay-per-view, and I watched Buddy just box his ears off. Like, y'all got to
okay.
tell me why this dude gets all these accolades, man.
I'm going to go first, and I'm going to let Keys chime in after me. Was that your first Tony Ferguson fight that you watched?
Yeah, first full fight. All I seen was, like, highlights and stuff. So this is my first
okay.
full fight watching it.
If you go back and watch Ferguson, some of his previous fights during his winning streak, you'll see why people really like Ferguson. Ferguson is a guy that does unorthodox things in the octagon, and he's known for having wars, and he normally switches up his style, but for some strange reason against Gaethje, he did everything on his feet instead of switching up his style. Normally, Tony Ferguson is a guy that comes in the octagon with a plan A, a plan B, and probably a plan C. I think against Gaethje, he just didn't diversify his attack, and it made him look really, really bad. And I thought, personally, he should have tried to wrestle more. He should have tried to take Gaethje down more. But when you listen to his corner was giving him so much bad advice. We have him right where we want him. He's starting to tire. You know, keep doing what you're doing. You know, stuff
right.
like that. And I just felt his corner just gave him bad information, and they weren't as in tune into the fight as they should have had him in tune. Keys, what you think, bro?
So it was basically a coaching meltdown. Ferguson's corner had a coaching meltdown because I watched the interview with Eddie Bravo, who's he's like an assistant coach. He's not like a head coach. And he said at one point during the fight, they were looking at him like he was the head coach. And, like, it was like nobody knew what to do. It was like nobody knew what to say, you know. And like you were saying, clearly the corner's perception of what the fight was clearly distorted. Clearly there was some kind of in their view of the fight that was just not, I don't know what they were watching, because a lot of the, you know, a lot of those guys that were saying that he was doing great, I don't really know what he was doing great at. If you could point it out, I would be amazed, because I don't think he was doing great at anything. So I don't really know where that came from. But anyways, Eddie Bravo is like one of the assistant coaches, and he's, you know, he was telling Ferguson to do Imanari rolls. But he explained that too, that he was, people said, why'd you tell Ferguson to do, because we talked about it on the show after this, me and Lee talked about it, and Lee said, why was Ferguson's corner telling him to do Imanari rolls in the fourth and fifth round? You should have told him, if he was going to do that, he should have did it in the second round. He should have been much earlier in the fight. He should have been going. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. If you wanted to go that route with it, you could have did that, but not when he was already, not when he had already gotten, like you said, boxed up for four rounds straight. The guy was already battered and bruised. The only reason he was even in there, the only reason he was even in there, and this is part of the reason, this is part of what I'm going to say that answers your question. You basically said, what's all like the hype about this guy, is that it's his heart too. It's his athleticism too. And it's his, like Lee said, his diversity and his style, where he changes what he's doing in the fight so quickly. He throws different things at his opponents that you wouldn't expect. Tony Ferguson goes from, you know, he can do so many different things on the ground. Even if he's been down, he works great from the bottom. We've seen him be on the bottom of guys getting, you know, hammers thrown down on him and actually come back and win the fight. He does really well under pressure, and you know, you see him doing, he's like a ninja in there. He's doing like, you know, somersault rolls, you know, to get away. He might get rocked, but he finds a way to go on and win the fight. He's one of those guys that you could technically beat him up, and you could be beating him for a portion of the fight, but he always finds a way to win. And that, I think, is like one of the biggest things about Ferguson. It was just in this fight, like I said, when I watched the interview, it seemed like they had a coaching meltdown. I don't think there was some wrong perception there. And then the other half of it, I think they really were so shocked by the fight that they didn't even know what to do. And part of it, I think, too, is they had a short camp to prepare for a guy. I think it was like 3 or 4 weeks at most, that once, you know, the time from the time they found out that the opponent switched. So they had a short camp to train for a completely different fighter than who they had been training for months and months and months, technically years and years, because, you know, they tried to get the original fight that Ferguson was supposed to be in, which wasn't that one. He was supposed to fight the undisputed champion of his division, and that fight's been booked like 5 times now. So they've been training for that guy for years, and they'd been training for him for months, but then they switched opponents with a couple weeks' notice to a guy that is mainly a striking camp. Now you're really training for a guy who's just going to stand and bang with you the entire time, as where before you were training for a guy who is going to shoot for your legs and try to take you down and work, you know, from the ground. And that's who they were training for. So I think, I don't know, his inability to adjust in the moment, I can't explain it, but I do think that, you know, that fight, having been your first fight watching Ferguson, it is kind of tough, because that was just a very, you know, it was suspect. It was very unlike him. You know, he was very unlike himself in there. It didn't even look like him. So you got to watch his other fights.
Kevin Lee fight.
That one, and then Ferguson. If you watch Ferguson versus Anthony Pettis, that's on YouTube.
Yeah,
too. That's
I watched
the Kevin
Lee fight and then the Pettis fight. Yeah.
All right,
man. We appreciate you calling in, man. Thank you.
All right.
What was your name again?
Nas, man.
Thank you for calling in, brother. Thank you for calling in.
For sure.
Let's jump this other call in.
Yo, who we got on the line?
Hello?
Yo, who we got on the line? Who is this?
Devin, how you guys doing?
Hey, what's up, Evan?
What's up, bro?
Not too much, not too much. Just had to call in, had to see what we're talking about.
Yeah, so yeah, we were just, before we were really, we covered a lot of ground. We were talking about Poirier, and then we started talking about Ferguson. Overall on the show, we've really been talking about just the lightweight title picture and just, how to shift the fights right now, because there's a lot of weird stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, what was your impression of Poirier versus Hooker?
Great fight. You know, it was a fun fight. I don't think it was as good as, like, you know, there was some, like, debate if, like, Zhang versus Joanna was better than that one. Some people thought that fight was better. I disagree because it was a good fight. It was a good fight. It's just, it slowed down after a while because Hooker's cardio, while it's good, just is a little suspect. So.
And then I also think Hooker was going for takedowns just to try to change the flow of the fight. He wasn't going for takedowns to try to submit Poirier. And I think when you're just going for takedowns just to get takedowns, most fighters know that. So that's why Poirier kept getting to his feet. It was like, okay, Hooker, you got a takedown. Then you stand up, you get punched out for like another minute and a half. Then you go for another takedown. He's right back on his feet. So I found his takedowns, I'm like, these are meaningless takedowns. What are you doing? And Hooker was like I was saying earlier, Hooker is the type of guy that's the perfect opponent for a Poirier because his defense is so suspect that he's going to get hit by a precise striker. He's going to get hit and tagged every time the guy wants to hit him because he doesn't have a good defense. Look at what Felder did to him. Felder figured him out. He was tattooing him. That's why I thought Felder actually won that fight. But I think Hooker is overrated. He's going to have to change his game up because he thinks he's a world-class striker when he isn't. And you can't be a world-class striker and have an F-rated defense game. It just doesn't work.
No, it's true, and I agree. And that was the. Someone had an opinion on that because someone, I forget who it was, but someone said that they liked the Hooker Poirier fight because of the defense was better in that one versus how the defense was in Zhang versus Joanna. And like, I think Zhang versus Joanna had more defense in general, just like, you know, because. It appeared at one, you know, in points of the Hooker Poirier fight, just kind of was rock 'em sock 'em robots. And granted, credit to Hooker because I personally feel like the bell, the bell saved Poirier. I don't know what round it was, but you kind of see he got hit with that knee, and he said it later in an interview that knee was really hurt him. And you see his hands drop, and it like he kind of turned away, and it just kind of seemed like he kind of was dazed. And then, of course, the bell rang, so, but...
Was that the second
end,
round? Was that the end of the second round
the,
or the end of the third?
Either or. It was early. It was early in the fight.
Yeah, I want to say it was the second round, but I think it may have been the third round. And I was shocked that Hooker actually landed that shot. And I was kind of shocked that Poirier didn't defend that shot. Go ahead, Keith.
Yeah, so... No, I hear everything y'all saying. What I'm trying to get to now is, and this is something that we were talking about earlier in the show, and we went into it pretty deeply. And Evan, yeah, this is, you know, feel free to jump in on it, or Lee jump in on it again. You know, me personally, I really like Poirier versus Ferguson next, but there's a lot of other fights you could jumble the lightweight pitcher in a lot of ways to, you know, make that not happen. Because you could still have, you know, Poirier, you know, Ferguson might want to wait and try to take the winner of Gaethje and Khabib. So that might be a thing. And then, you know, there's still, you know, people forget all the time. You still have Charles Oliveira, who's right there. People love to forget about Charles Oliveira. He's right there. I think he's in the top five, if not the top six. He might be the number six if he's not number five. So you might even have a Poirier and Oliveira fight.
Keys, let me jump in real quick. Hey, Evan, I kind of sort of dropped a bombshell earlier, and we're going to let you jump in. Mm-hmm. I said if Max Holloway loses to Volkanovski, that they should make Max Holloway versus Tony Ferguson. That way, you know, you get Max a credible opponent coming up, and you get a fight that fans would love to see. Me and Keys are kind of split on the McGregor portion of the fight. Keys, go ahead and get him your McGregor part of the situation. Then I get him mine, and then we'll let him comment.
So what I was thinking was is now, Evan, I don't know if you saw it, but Ferguson is you know, throwing his name in the hat for a rematch with Gaethje. What I was saying earlier was I believe, and Lee has a different view on this, is I believe no matter which way the Gaethje-Khabib fight goes, you don't get Gaethje and Ferguson 2. While it did do good pay-per-view numbers, it did really well, you don't get that because if Gaethje beats Khabib, I believe Khabib gets an immediate rematch. If Khabib beats Gaethje, I think the UFC will try to push for Khabib and Tony. So I don't think either way, or they could, you know, Lee has another view that of other things that could pan out. But those are the ways I see it going with that. And on neither road does Tony get a rematch with Gaethje. So, Lee, go ahead. Let him know what you thought about it.
And then I think that if Khabib beats Gaethje, that opens the door for Khabib versus Conor 2. Because the UFC would look at it as if Khabib has beat Dustin, Ferguson lost to Gaethje, and Khabib just beat Gaethje, and that opens the door for the business fight of Khabib versus Poirier, Khabib versus Conor 2. And then I think Gaethje takes time off, and you get Ferguson versus Poirier, unless, you know, Max somehow falls into that picture. How do you see it falling out? I know that was a lot, but you just give us your spin on it. And I want to hear your take on Max moving up that division and possibly taking on Ferguson. So go, Evan.
Absolutely. So for the McGregor thing, when you talk about the lightweight division, you talk about Khabib, you have to talk about McGregor. It's just there. That rematch is there. The money is there. So what Keith said, that, you know, if Justin were able to beat Khabib and they would give Khabib an immediate rematch, I wonder if they would actually give him an immediate rematch just based off Khabib's talk of retirement. And not for nothing, I don't know if this is technically or if this is true, he only has one title defense. He's not a very active champion. Granted, the Tony Ferguson fights fold out many times. So I wonder if they would give him a rematch immediately, or if he just might go and retire.
That's a good point.
And then on your side, Lee, about if Khabib wins, the door is right there for the Conor rematch. And you know, like, as you guys were talking, you know, you're looking at the rankings. You know, it's like Khabib wins, you can do the Poirier rematch, which obviously doesn't necessarily sell because of just what happened in their first fight. And then the UFC is not going to go for a lower ranked fighter like Oliveira to fight, you know, to fight Khabib. So it would appear, business-wise, and the rankings are a joke, so we'll get into that. But business-wise, they'll probably go with the Conor rematch. So that's what I see. I don't know. I hope not. Not for, you know, not for nothing. I'm a big Conor fan. He's kind of like semi the reason I got into the sport. He just doesn't deserve a rematch. There's no reason for it. But then to answer your other question about Max Holloway, I like that fight. I think that's a great idea. Because I personally think Volkanovski's going to win. And I think, you know, you look at Max's only fight at 55, which was a war against Poirier. It's a perfect opportunity to jump up into the ranks and, you know, beat a top contender. Like, for example, you had Kelvin Gastelum and Darren Till both coming off losses, you know, both kind of like, all right, well, Darren Till, Kelvin Gastelum lost to Izzy. Now he's getting his shot. And you got Darren Till coming up from getting knocked out, but he's got that stock. So they're similar in the sense that Holloway will always have stock in his name. And then Ferguson's just coming off, you know, his first loss in however long. So I think that's a great fight. I think they should definitely do that. If they don't do that, Charles Oliveira kind of jump up and get either a Poirier or a Ferguson, because I think he deserves it. But those are just
I do too.
Cents.
I do too. I think Oliveira deserves a big name, and I think the UFC.
Oliveira is number six. By the way, I just fact checked it. Oliveira is number six. Like I said before, I thought if he wasn't top five, he's top six. He is top. He is number six.
And I think the UFC should offer him a top name. And every top name that turns down a fight with Oliveira, they should push it out to the public. Say, this guy refuses to fight him. This guy refuses to fight him. So that way we'll know that why wouldn't this guy fight him? He's in the top 10. You got to give a guy that's in the top 10 a chance to move up. I hate when people say you shouldn't fight a guy that's under you. I agree when they like 11 through 15, but when a guy's in the top 10, basically all you guys are basically in at the same point unless you're in the top five. So I just hope these guys in the top five don't turn down a fight against Oliveira, man. I think a lot of them will because they feel like they're better than that and they shouldn't fight down. But I think Oliveira is a worthy opponent, and I think he deserves a shot.
Absolutely.
You know what it is too. He's a very easy guy to lose to because he's good. He's really good in both departments. If you can't be some guys when they're waiting for the takedown, they're like, okay, I can just box with this guy because he's not a good boxer, like Khabib, not a good boxer. Not the case at Oliveira. He is a good boxer, so you can't just stay on the feet. If you take him down, he's going to submit you likely within 60 seconds, if not, you know, a minute and a half. He's very good on the ground, very dangerous, and he's improved his striking a lot from the past. You know, it seems like his striking has gotten a notch higher in his, you know, each fight for like his last three fights. It's kind of scary. It's kind of scary, and I feel like he just needs that name to just boost him into the championship talk. I think he is one of the best fighters. I wouldn't mind seeing Oliveira versus Felder. He wants to come back. I wouldn't mind seeing Oliveira and Felder. I think that'd be a good one.
That'd be a nice rematch because I don't know if you knew that they did fight before and Felder won, but you know who knows.
I think if you can't get Ferguson versus Max or Ferguson versus Poirier, I think you have to go the route of Ferguson versus Oliveira, man. Because everybody else, I think, that's ranked above Ferguson or that's in the top five, they're all strikers to a certain extent. Whereas I think Ferguson is a guy that can give Oliveira problems on the feet and hold his own on the mat. I think that would be a fight that most of us UFC fans or MMA fans would love to see, although I think the casual fan wouldn't know who Charles Oliveira is and what he brings to the table. But an MMA purist would love to see Oliveira versus Ferguson.
For sure, for sure. But, man, we definitely got through a lot of good stuff tonight. We got plenty of time, and our future shows we'll get back on. I apologize to the listeners who we didn't get on for a little bit. You know, we were a little bit slacking in the department of, you know, actually being live on the air. But we're gonna get right, and that's why we had to do the Thursday fill in show. I put that in the bio that it was a Thursday fill in show because, you know, we couldn't work out the days this week, so we wanted to make sure that we got one out there for you. So we're gonna try to get back more consistent and jump right back next week, because next week's a big card too. So we're definitely gonna want to talk about that. You have three title fights. It's a really crazy week next week. That's a really big fight week and three pivotal fights in each of those divisions. So we'll definitely be back to talk about that. And thank you to each caller that called in. This was a pretty high volume show in terms of callers. It was pretty unexpected. We had a new caller on the line tonight. Yeah, definitely appreciate it. We had a new caller on the line tonight. Honestly, I can't recall his name off the top of my head, but I appreciate you calling in. That was definitely his first time calling into the show, at least that I can remember. I don't recall it, but I appreciate that. Pretty sure that was his first time, so definitely appreciate you calling in, chopping up with us. Hopefully you come back on soon. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Hopefully everybody enjoyed the show. And, yeah, that's all I got. Lee, take it away.
Next Friday for sure. I'm calling it now. Next Friday, 8:30 Eastern, 6:30 Mountain Time, we'll be up here previewing UFC 251. We'll be giving predictions, breaking down fights. We still got to do our top five show. We'll probably be doing that maybe the week after next, maybe a Wednesday show or a Thursday show. We'll see how it goes. But we definitely have our show coming along.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. That being said, everybody have a safe 4th, social distancing. Keys, I know you probably ain't been doing much of that here lately. Like they say, the lion is still out there. So, and that lion is COVID-19. Thanks to Evan for calling in once again, being part of the show. Thanks to the definitely the new caller. And I want to say the guy that called in earlier, the first caller, I want to say he called in before. And,
it
was a good show tonight.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, we had a good show tonight. We talked about a lot. Evan, I wish we could have got your opinion on the third topic that we talked about, because that was pretty interesting. But I'm quite sure you'll probably join us next Friday as we preview UFC 251 inaugural fight card on Fight Island. And I saw a video of Fight Island, how they put it together. You guys go to TMZ Sports. Check it out, man. It's pretty nice what they did in such a short amount of time. That being said,
yeah,
everybody be good. Take care. Yeah, everybody take care of yourself. Have fun this weekend. Be safe.
By the way, I tested negative. I got tested for COVID-19. I got tested negative. Just for the listeners, just so you know, because Lee's trying to put dirt on my name. You see how he tried to play me? I tested negative.
That's what's up. That's what's up, man. But I just a personal plug. I'll be writing an article for Scrap News next week, previewing the three title fights next weekend, and also have a piece coming out on Sean O'Malley on the Scrap News. So everybody have fun this weekend. Let your hair down. De-stress. We are living in this time in our country. Well, we got a lot going on all at one time. This weekend, enjoy your family, enjoy your time, take care of yourself. Live, love, laugh. Live your life to the fullest. Tell somebody you love them and have one good laugh every day. That being said, Lee and Keys, episode 147, signing off. As always, in closing. Peace.